And welcome in. It's a very special edition of the Titans Wire podcast brought to you by TitansWire.com, part of the USA Today Sports Media Group's NFL Wire Network. I'm the managing editor of the Titans Wire, Kyle Madsen, and joining me is senior contributor Justin Mello. A very special edition of the podcast. As I mentioned, we have Titans tight end Philip Supernaw coming up for you. Justin landed that interview and chatted with the Titans tight end who caught his first career touchdown in last Sunday's loss. Justin, speaking of last Sunday's loss, we'll get right into it here. I know last week, after the Texans loss, we said, hey, there's not a lot to really talk about here. They got their butts kicked. Let's move on to next week. But then the next week, we thought they'd bounce back, and they really didn't. And it's so tough because you look at this team in the landscape of the AFC South, and they're still in it. I mean, everybody's kind of right there within a game of the Jaguars. But they looked really bad without Marcus Mariota. And I don't think there was any doubt about the value that Marcus Mariota has, but it really showed on Sunday just how valuable he is to the offense.
Yeah, Kyle, life without Marcus was not pretty on Sunday, and that's an understatement. The offense really, really struggled under Castle. They really couldn't move the ball at all. There's no fear of the pass. Dolphins stacked the box, defending the run, and yeah, they just struggled in every facet of the game, especially on offense, though, of course.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because I hesitate to say, I mean, you don't want to hit a panic button, but you kind of have to on some level. But if Mariota comes back, I mean, they beat the Dolphins by 40 if Mariota's under center. That was a bad, bad Dolphins team they lost to. But let's face, Matt Castle probably shouldn't be an NFL quarterback. And they had to throw him in there, and he dropped back 32 times. That just seemed, I don't know if it was something with the Dolphins defense. Obviously, the coaches know the offense better than we do. But 32 passes to 20 runs with this offensive line, this running game, and Matt Castle under center, that doesn't seem like a recipe to win a lot of games.
No, you definitely have to wonder why Castle dropped back 32 times, as you mentioned. The run game was struggling, so perhaps they felt that was time to abandon the run. Murray, I think, had, 58 rushing yards, I believe it was. But, yeah, I mean, going into Week 6, it's as close to as a must-win game as it gets in Week 6.
Yeah, they go in, they have the Colts on Monday night, and this is a game they just, even if Matt Castle's under center, you don't like their chances as much with Castle, but Mariota, I think, has to play. I know Malarkey has been very cautious with these hamstring injuries, and I get it. I get that you want your guys healthy for the stretch drive, you know, for the final 11 weeks or 10 games, rather than have him for this game right here. But if you fall to 2-4 and you've now lost 3 in a row, 2 division games, one of them on national TV, Monday Night Football, now you're kind of figuring out how you're going to climb out of this hole. Because if they fall to 2-4, they've got to go, what do we say, 9-1 the rest of the year? Maybe 8-2 to win the division. That's a tough spot to put your team in. I understand this is a very good team, but that's a very, very tough hole to put yourself in.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Kyle. I think Marcus must play this game. I mean, this is a team who, you know, just a month ago we were talking about being one of the most promising teams in the NFL. If they go out on Monday night and they roll out Castle and they lose in primetime to a Colts team that doesn't have Andrew Luck, then, I mean, you haven't hit rock bottom, but you're awfully close to it. It's not a good situation to put your team in.
Yeah, sure. I wrote a little bit about that rock bottom concept, and it's so tough for this team because they did play with their backup quarterback last week. They had lost like that to the Dolphins with Mariota under center. All right, now we're figuring out what in the world is going on. But it was pretty clear that having Castle under center completely derails the offense and everything they want to do. Plus, Taylor Lewan got hurt, and Dennis Kelly, it turns out, not as good as Pro Bowler Taylor Lewan. But this is just a matter of if Mariota, on game day, it's a game-time decision, if Mariota comes in Sunday and says, I cannot play, I'm hurt, I can't step into my throws, I'm completely immobile, that's one thing. But if it's a matter of him saying, I'm ready, I'm good, and Mularkey goes, nah, let's give it one more week, I think that, to me, would be inexcusable. Because even if they have to scrap the zone read stuff and they say, hey, Marcus, if you get outside the pocket, you know, get rid of it. Just throw it away. Don't take off. I feel like if you're going to have a statue back there at quarterback, you'd rather have it be Marcus Mariota than Matt Cassel.
Yeah, absolutely. And on top of it, I think if this was a game, perhaps, you know, an out-of-conference game, if they were playing an NFC team, then I think you'd consider sitting him for one more week. You're going to sit down and say, okay, you know what? There's not going to be any tiebreaker playoff implications with this game at the end of the year. But to be a division game against the Colts on Monday night, I mentioned a team, the Colts, the Titans have not beat the Colts for a long time. The Colts have won 11 in a row in this series. The last time the Titans beat the Colts was on October 30th, 2011. So,
man,
this is a must-win game in primetime, no less. You have to feel that come Monday night, Marcus will have had 15 days off since the injury. Whether you believe Ian Rappaport's report that Marcus is going to miss 2 to 4 weeks, or you believe Mularkey's day-to-day designation, it's been 2 weeks since Mariota suffered the hamstring injury. You feel like he has to play this game, really. If he's even 75%, I think that he has to play in this game.
Yeah, because at some point, like I said, I totally get, and it's such a hard thing with injuries, because you don't want Mariota hurting himself and endangering his season, because you only have, you know, you have a finite amount of years to play in the NFL. And if you wipe out your season trying to push yourself back from injury, that's obviously not what you want. But if this is a matter of, we just really want to make sure, I think you have to play him. That's just, I mean, we can sit here all we want. We're two dudes sitting behind microphones, you know, telling a guy he should play a football game. But from Mularkey's perspective, if Marcus Mariota walks in on Monday, I think I said Sunday earlier as well, but if he walks in on Monday and says, hey, I'm ready to go, I can play, you have to let him.
Yeah, I agree. I'm in total agreement with you, Kyle. I think that, again, I mean, before going into the season, me and you mentioned it, you know, before the Houston game as well, they put such an emphasis on division games heading into this season. Again, they're a team that we've mentioned it in the past, they went 9-7 last year, didn't make the playoffs because they were 2-4 inside the division. So you come into this year saying, okay, priority number one is we have to be better inside the division. Started out well with the win in Jacksonville, came back, wheels fell off against Houston. So here's your third opportunity inside the division on prime time against a team you haven't beat in 6 years. If your quarterback is even close to being able to play in this game, after we saw the way the offense was derailed in Miami with Matt Cassel running the show, then you have to have Marcus play in this game.
Well, and I think here's what I think. I'm putting my conspiracy theory hat on. I'm wondering if Mularkey at some point told somebody in the building, I'm going to keep him out as long as possible. I'll keep him out for 4 weeks if I have to, which would have kept him out for Miami, Indianapolis, and then the Browns and Ravens.
Well, the Ravens come after the bye week.
Okay, right. Yeah, the bye is in there somewhere. I was trying to pull the schedule off memory, but I'm not that good.
For the bye's after the Browns game.
Yeah, that's correct. So that would have been, so if he says, I'm going to try and hold him out for 4 weeks, let's just say he told somebody that. That would have been Dolphins, Colts, Browns, and then the bye. And then he comes back for that game against the Ravens on November 5th. Because I think Mularkey was expecting, hey, we can beat the Dolphins with Matt Cassel. We'll be able to beat the Colts with Matt Cassel. And then we'll be able to beat the Browns with him. And even if you lose one of those, you go 2-1 in that stretch, you're still fine. But now I think that script flipped a little bit after Sunday in Miami. I think the idea that, hey, Cassel can run this offense got derailed a little bit, because it was very clear the Dolphins did not fear Matt Cassel at all. And as good as the Titans offensive line is, and as good as that running game is, if there's eight guys standing in the box ready to pin their ears back and get downhill against the run, it takes away the threat of the play action, and it just completely takes away what the Titans are so good at on offense. And it makes their running game ineffective. And they can't be successful on offense, and their defense isn't good enough to go out and win them a game. So they're not going to win with Matt Cassel under center, and I think Mike Mularkey saw that on Sunday.
I mean, you know what? And we talked about it before the Miami game. I thought going in they had a chance to beat the Dolphins with Cassel.
And they did.
And they did. They did, exactly. That's what I was about to say. They only lost 16-10, and there were a couple wishy-washy calls in there, to be honest with you. Obviously, the Cassel fumble was a very strange call to me. The offensive pass interference that wiped out a Delanie Walker 60-yard touchdown was even worse of a call, in my opinion. And they only lost this game 16-10. With all the calls going in their Miami's favor, and Cassel not being able to run the offense at all. So, but again, if in my opinion, if they couldn't beat the Dolphins with Matt Cassel under center, then I don't think they can beat the Colts with Matt Cassel under center. As bad as the Colts have looked in some of these games, I think they have a better offense than the Dolphins do.
Hey, you know what's amazing is you mentioned that pass interference call on Jonnu Smith. Let's say all things stay the same, but that touchdown to Delanie Walker counts, and Cassel goes 22 of 32 for 200 yards and two touchdowns. All of a sudden we're going, hey, yeah, they can keep Mariota out one more week if he's not feeling good.
It's a game of inches.
You're
right.
But at the same time, if you watch that game start to finish, that Dolphins defense never felt threatened. And honestly, the touchdown to Walker was Delanie making a play. And making a nice catch, shaking a couple guys off, and getting in the end zone. That's not something I don't think they would be able to pull off multiple times.
No, and you're totally right. It totally flips the script, right? They could have won that game, but they didn't. And this isn't Major League Baseball. We don't play 162 games.
Yeah.
That's 16 games, and every single one of them counts. You're in a 2-3 hole right now. You can't go 2-4. You look inside your division, the Texans are going to beat the Browns this weekend. I think it's safe to assume.
Yeah.
The Jaguars play a very winnable game against the Rams. That'll be a closely contested contest, but you can't drop this game. You can't fall to 2-4. We can't stress that enough.
Yeah, the Jags are such a weird team. I don't want to dive too far into the division here, but I can't decide if the Jaguars are good or not.
I don't think the Jaguars know if they're good or not.
Yeah, it feels like as long as Blake Bortles is under center, you're not that good.
I mean, he went 8-14 for 95 yards on Sunday, and they won 30-9.
That's insane. Yeah, like that's not a sustainable winning model, right? And so let's say the Jags aren't that good, but the Texans just lost J.J. Watt and Whitney Mercilus for the year. That's a huge blow to their defense. That's equivalent of losing Marcus Mariota and DeMarco Murray for the Titans. And then you have the Colts, who may not have Andrew Luck for another couple weeks, and the Titans have a chance to put them in a 2-4 hole. So, I mean, this division is so weird, and the fact it's still winnable is such a good sign for the Titans, who kind of feel like you said they kind of feel like they're at rock bottom right now, but it's still right there. Even if they lose this week, there's a possibility they could still go win the division. But you'd feel a lot better about it if they go win this week.
Absolutely. I mean, it seems like this league changes week to week on how you feel about just about every team. But
yeah,
the Titans had 14 excellent days in a row when they beat Jacksonville and Seattle. Now we're sitting here, and they've had 8 bad days with the losses to Houston and Miami. So now they got to get this thing turned around on Monday night against the Colts. Put an end to the losing streak. It's a 2-game losing streak, as you mentioned. Come out. They've got an opportunity, if Marcus plays in this game, to dominate the Colts on primetime in front of a national audience, earn some of that respect back that they've lost over the last 2 weeks, and say, hey, we're still the best team in this division, and we're about to take it by the horns.
Yeah, and something I think they have to do on Monday. I keep saying Sunday. It's Monday night. They're playing Monday Night Football against Colts. Something I think they have to do, and I wrote about this today on TitansWire.com, I think they have to get Derrick Henry more involved. He has,
see that.
In the Titans' two wins this season, he has 27 carries, 13 and 14, respectively, and he's averaging 5.4 yards per carry in those games. In losses, in their three losses, he has 16 carries and averages 2.6 yards per carry. And then dating back to last season, the Titans are 5-1 when Derrick Henry gets double-digit carries.
It's a telling statistic, and I think Malarkey mentioned just the other day that they have to figure out a way to get him more involved. I'd like to see it. I mean, Murray is obviously struggling right now. You know, I'd love to see them come out Monday night and start the first offensive series with Henry at running back.
Yeah, just, I mean, you don't even have to keep him in there for 75% of the snaps. Like you said, start him, get him. You got to get him going somehow. I want to see them target him in the passing game more because he is a very effective pass catcher, and he's such a unique mismatch for a defense. And he's a running back, and he's 6'2", 240 or whatever he is. I mean, that's such a tough cover. I feel like they have to find a way to get him the ball. They have to find a way to get Taywan Taylor involved. I think he's an underutilized piece. They ran that jet sweep for him, and it went for 5 yards early in the game, and then I think he had one target the rest of the game. They have playmakers on this offense, and I think they've been underutilized to this point. And I think once they start getting those guys involved, I think we'll see this offense take off.
It'd be great to see Corey Davis active on Monday night as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Malarkey hasn't ruled him out yet. He did rule Jonathan Cyprien out, but he did not rule Corey Davis out, which I'm taking as a good sign. Because Malarkey's not shy saying, yeah, that guy's not playing.
No, he's not. He tells it out like it is, Malarkey. So it's encouraging to see that Davis hasn't been ruled out. I think they've missed him. Don't really have a go-to weapon on the perimeter right now. Eric Decker has been struggling.
Yeah.
Rishard Matthews has had flashes, but really neither or Decker's not playing like it, and Matthews is not the physical specimen that Corey Davis is. I think they could really use that target on the outside.
Yeah, and Rishard Matthews is a tremendous number two receiver. But if he's your number one option, your number two option probably isn't scaring a defense very much, and that's how it is with Decker, as you mentioned. So once they get Corey Davis back, I think that will help a lot as well as, like I said, getting Henry involved, getting Taylor involved, and just finding ways to get the ball in the hands of their playmakers. So,
I mentioned earlier that here's a fun fact for you, that the Colts have won 11 in a row in this series. The last Titans win came on October 30th, 2011. That was a 27-10 win at LP Field. And just because I love spewing random facts.
Please.
Curtis Painter started that game for the Colts at quarterback.
Oh, outstanding.
And I can do you one better than that. Curtis Painter led the Colts in rushing that day.
Wow.
And
Matt Hasselbeck. Holy crap.
Matt Hasselbeck started that game at quarterback for the Titans. Nate Washington was the star of the day with two touchdowns.
Yeah.
Rob Baronis made two field goals from 50 yards. Jason McCourty recovered a blocked punt in the end zone for a Titans special teams touchdown. But by far the best statistic of that game is, you know who led the Titans in yards?
Who's that?
Javon Ringer with 102.
Javon Ringer, holy smokes.
Javon Ringer led on the ground, had 60 rush yards, and he also added 40 through the air.
Javon Ringer, that's amazing. Is he Michigan State?
I believe so. I believe so. He was a late pick for the Titans. I think he was a day three guy.
Yeah, fifth round pick. Out of Michigan State, yeah. And Javon, that's amazing. One of my favorite things to do. Oh, Lavelle Hawkins, my guy.
Lavelle Hawkins played in that game. Mark Mariani played in that game as well.
Hey, I called Mark Mariani's college games, or some of them. He played up here at Montana, which is in the school I went to, Sacramento State. Montana's in our conference. And Mark Mariani played at Montana while I was there. Another guy who went to Sac State, who actually played with the Titans for a little bit, Chase D'Adder.
Wow.
I'm not even sure he made the practice squad, but he was definitely on the team in the preseason.
That's a name I don't even recognize, I'll be honest.
Yeah. Like I said, the only reason I know is because he went to our school. Yeah, anyways, I like diving into to Pro Football Reference and going back through old box scores. That's fun. So that's our Titans Colts preview. Mariota has to play, and the Titans need to get Derrick Henry the ball.
It's pretty straightforward. Hopefully everyone else gets it. So
the good news for the Titans, I'm going to write about this tomorrow, I think. The Colts defense is really bad. I mean, Brian Hoyer looked like a competent quarterback against them last week. And if Mariota plays, they should be able to torch their defense pretty much whenever they want. So that should be a good sign for the Titans going in, that they are playing a very, very inept defense.
I think every Titans fan will spend the rest of this week extremely curious regarding whether or not Mariota will play or not.
And
all that matters.
It's odd because everything kind of gets pushed back a day because of the Monday game instead of the Sunday game. So
that might work out in their favor.
Yeah, I think so too. It's going to be a little bit of a slow news week. You know, typically we get a practice report or some kind of injury report on a Tuesday, on a Wednesday. But that'll get pushed back a little bit. So I don't think we'll have any major news until like maybe Friday on whether Mariota's going to play. And they said he's a game time decision, but I have a feeling we'll get a decision before that.
You think so? I think Mularkey's going to play the cards close to his chest. I don't think he's going to say anything until Monday.
Yeah, I maybe Mularkey won't, but I think we're going to get some kind of report.
Yeah.
Out of Nashville that the Titans are leaning towards Mariota playing.
Or not playing,
right. You know what I'm saying. I think we're going to get some kind of report coming out. But, hey, enough of us. You have you got to chat with Titans tight end Philip Supernaw tonight. The night we're recording this. What is it? 10:06 Pacific time on Tuesday night. You got to chat with Philip Supernaw. He caught his first touchdown, his first career touchdown. He's bounced around the league a little bit. Finally got in the end zone this weekend. What'd you guys chat about?
Yeah, I'm thrilled for Philip. I got to sit down with him about an hour ago. You guys are about to...
Philip, you're on a first-name basis with him already. Nice, dude.
me and Philip are tight. I'm happy for him. He caught his first career touchdown on Sunday, as you mentioned. It's been a long time coming. He's in his third year with the Titans. He's a great guy. We talked a little, of course, about the touchdown. You know, some banter regarding him and Delanie Walker competing on the stat sheet right now.
Love it.
Delanie hasn't caught a touchdown yet. Philip has one. He hasn't let Walker hear the end of it since Sunday, I can assure you. We talked a little history as well. You know, as I mentioned, in his third year with the Titans, talking about being a UDFA, the life of a UDFA, trying to make an NFL roster.
Sweet.
We talked a little about that Matt Castle play on Sunday that grew some controversy. So I had a great conversation with Philip. You guys are about to listen to it.
Sweet. So we'll get right to that. Here is Philip Supernaw.
This is Justin Mello on the Titans Wire podcast with Titans tight end Philip Supernaw. Thanks for joining me today, Philip.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Now, before we get into anything, first things first, congratulations on your first career touchdown Sunday against the Dolphins.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Been a long time coming.
No doubt. Now, I'm curious, did you keep the ball?
No, I didn't. The ball, I guess, we do this thing for ALS charity. Every ball that goes into the stands after a touchdown to a tight little Titans fan, to a kid, give $1,000 to ALS, so I'm pretty sure that's what it went to.
That's amazing, supporting your friend Tim Shaw.
Yep.
That's a good reason to not keep the ball. That's.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, with that touchdown, Philip, you've got more receiving touchdowns on the year than Delanie Walker. Are you going to give him a hard time about that?
Yeah, I already did. He's got the one rushing touchdown, but he doesn't have any receiving touchdowns yet, so I got after him pretty good about it.
What did you say to him?
It must be nice. Or it feels pretty good having a touchdown. You wouldn't know anything about it, but
I'm carrying this position group right now.
Oh, yeah. Well, the rookies got two right now, so I'm in second place. But
I was going to say, John... Yeah, John Hughes got two.
Yep.
No doubt, having some fun with it. I'm curious. Was that play designed for you the entire time from the goal line, or was that malarkey giving you a chance to make up for the penalties?
You know, it was we got on the one, and it was a run play to DeMarco, I believe, and then obviously the first penalty, and then the second time we called it, then the second penalty, then we called it again, and finally did it. So.
Okay, no doubt.
Finally worked third time around.
Third time's the charm.
That's right.
Now, I wanted to get your perspective quickly on the Castle fumble. I don't want to get too much into that, but I don't think you were on the field for that play, but did you hear a whistle?
You know, like, it's just kind of weird because, you know, I don't want to get too far into it, but there's been things said about people hearing whistles, and they said that, you know, they didn't blow it dead or whatever, but either way, you know, there was already Dolphins players walking onto the field when the guy was running into the end zone, so it's hard to see how it's a legal play, but, you know, I don't really have much to say about that play, but
yeah.
It didn't really make too much sense to me.
Yeah, I don't really want you to get into it either. I don't want to get into it, but yeah, I read the next day, I guess when you guys were watching the tape, that Malarkey said he counted 13 Dolphins on the field, which was kind of surprising to me. I didn't catch that live or anything, but yeah, I mean, enough said about that. You were born in Nashville, Philip, but you moved to Southeast Texas as a child, is that correct?
Yeah, I was born here in Nashville, and then before I was even a year old, moved back to Houston, where I lived, until I went to college in Arkansas, and actually didn't come get back to Nashville until I signed here 2 years ago, so I left before I was a year old, kind of came back full circle.
Oh, wow. Do you still have family in Nashville?
No, all my family's back in Houston.
Okay, and how's everyone doing? I know, like you said, Southeast Texas, post-Hurricane Harvey. Are your friends and family doing all right?
Yeah, I think, you know, I was pretty lucky with all the people that I knew, and friends and family, and everyone came out pretty good. It, you know, that devastation down there was, I mean, you can't even really explain it, but luckily, you know, people in my inner circle came out pretty good.
I'm glad to hear it. It's pretty terrible what's been going on, but there seems like there's been a lot of help from some celebrities around the area. It's very, very positive to see what's going on down there, or how you guys are responding to it, at least.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a good guy like J.J. Watt doing that, you know, with this platform, and, you know, some other people just kind of stepping up to the plate when people are in need, and just, you know, it was refreshing to see with all this stuff and all the division that's going on with the NFL that, doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, you know, everyone's, you know, got to get hard and willing to help out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's definitely enlightening to see. Back to some football. Malarkey's a former tight end himself. Do you find he expects more out of his tight ends than some of the other head coaches you've been around?
Yeah, I think so, because he was our position coach when I first got here. And so he always kind of looks at us as his players. You know, we're obviously all his players, but he kind of just looks at us with a special eye, just keeping an eye on what we're doing, because you know, he's coached us personally in our position group. And I think that he just expects a lot from us. I mean, he knows what it takes to play the position, and, you know, he knows what comes along with it, some of the difficulties, and some of the things that he's kind of able to share with us. I think he still enjoys that, you know, being the head coach of the role he's in now, but just kind of being able to give us your sense to us, though, I think it's definitely a good thing.
Absolutely. You mentioned when you first got there, he was your position coach. I believe you're in your third year with the Titans. Is that correct?
Right now, yeah, I'm in my third year.
Yeah, I thought so. This is your third year. You bounced around a little before you found some stability now in Tennessee. You went undrafted, and you spent time with Houston, Baltimore, and Kansas City before you landed in Tennessee. How would you describe the life of an undrafted free agent in the NFL who enters training camp without a guaranteed roster spot?
It just takes a lot of dedication. I mean, you're never on the radar to begin with, you know, and you just have to. It's really hard because you got to think about, you know, all with the pressure of learning the plays and the pressure of, you know, just getting a job in general. You got to think about, you know, you you're not on the radar, you're not on anyone's map. You got to kind of do something every day to make them notice you. And it was definitely tough. It was a struggle. But, people do it all the time. You see some dedicated guys that stick with it and end up careers out of it.
Speaking of having to do things really well, I think obviously what helped you a lot is you're a heck of a blocker, and Mularkey and company certainly trust you in the run game to block. So I'm curious, who are some of the toughest defenders you've gone up against or you've had to block?
One that always sticks out to me is Vaughn Miller. Obviously, everyone knows how good he is, but I mean, when I first had to go against him, I felt like I was going against Gumby, man. That guy just moves around. I mean, it's crazy. Punch in one direction, he's in the other direction. So, I don't know, man. That guy would definitely stuck out to me to be one of the best. And, I mean, there's a bunch of good guys. You know, when I was on the Ravens, we always had Suggs, we had Courtney Upshaw, Dimmerville. And I think those guys actually were the ones, going against those guys in practice every day, were really the ones that helped me step my game up. As far as just having that kind of competition every day at practice.
Yeah, I mean, they've seemed to just produce pass rushers down there like it's a factory.
Yeah, I mean, every year, yeah, it doesn't matter if it's an undrafted free agent or, someone they drafted. Every year they got good edge rushers.
Yeah, they've got someone always. Who's the most fun player to be around on the offense?
On our team?
Yes.
I think probably Delaney. Him and I got a pretty close relationship. And, no matter the situation, we always find a way to laugh about whatever it is or, just try to make the best out of everything. And I think it's in a business where there's so much pressure and so many up and down, that I think him and I have a good relationship and we just always find light in any situation. So probably him is the most fun.
Which is why you can let him know that you've got more receiving touchdowns than him this year.
Exactly.
Now,
I can't usually say much to him about stats, so I'm going to use this time.
take it and run with it.
Yep.
No doubt. I think anyone who follows the Titans is going to guess your answer to this next question, but who would you say is the biggest trash talker on the team, on the field?
Biggest trash talker. It used to be Damian Stafford, but Staff left last year. He was a safety. He left last year. Biggest trash talker, maybe me.
Really?
I don't really know. I can't really.
Okay.
We have a bunch of nice guys, guys that just, we kind of all have put your head down and go to work, let your play do the talking. And, that's a really hard question, actually.
Taylor doesn't give you a run for your money?
Oh God. Sorry. I completely forgot about one. Yeah, he takes the cake.
Yeah, I don't know how you forget. I can imagine. I can just imagine.
Yeah, definitely one.
So on the flip side, you said there's a bunch of nice guys. So who's the nicest guy on the team? I hope that doesn't get you in trouble.
Marcus, for sure, 100%. I've never seen him be mean to another human being in my life.
Yeah, that seems to be what everyone says about Marcus. Everyone always says it's Marcus.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Always treats everybody well, no matter the situation. Even when you think he'd be mad, he's not, so...
Well, that's what you hoped from the face of the franchise.
Oh, definitely.
I really appreciate your time, Philip. We're going to let you get going. This was Philip Supernaw on the Titans Wire podcast. Big game coming up Monday night against the Colts. Prime time. The bright lights will be on, trying to get back to 500. Best of luck in that game, Philip.
All right, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
That was Justin Mello with Titans tight end Philip Supernaw. Just wanted to thank everybody for listening. This has been the Titans Wire podcast. I'm managing editor Kyle Madsen. You can follow me on Twitter at Kyle A. Madsen. And he is senior contributor Justin Mello. You can follow him at Justin M, as in Michael, _NFL. Follow along, latest Titans news, notes, updates, and always check out TitansWire.com and follow Titans Wire on Twitter at The Titans Wire. You can follow it on Facebook as well under the same name. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Until next week, for Justin Mello, I'm Kyle Madsen. Have a good night.